Hey guys, so I just wanted to share with you a presentation that I gave a week or two ago for some of my coworkers. The topic is eating disorders, medications, diagnoses, things like that. So just be mindful with the episode. And if you are someone who is on any of these medications and we're talking about side effects and things like that, I just want to make sure that you guys are deferring to your specific providers on any questions that you may have, because they have a fuller picture on your complete story and your history and your recovery and your treatment and all the things. So just make sure that you're reaching out to them if you have any questions. And of course, you can reach out to me too, but as far as like your treatment plan goes, just make sure you're covering things with your provider. All right, let's get started.
All right, so what we're going to be talking about is some of the common psychotropic meds that you guys may see us prescribing to some of our patients. And then we're going to touch on some of the psych comorbidities too. So I'm going to leave space at the end also if anyone has any questions related to eating disorder diagnoses. But I'm not just going to go through like the DSM-5 because I'm pretty sure that we're all very familiar with diagnosing those, but I know some of the cases can be kind of complicated. So if you guys have any questions about that, then feel free to ask that, whatever, really. So let's see. I want us to first take a look at mental health disorders that we may see in combination with eating disorders. So the most common ones are depression, anxiety, OCD, PTSD. So depression and anxiety are two examples of those psychiatric conditions that can either be the cause of the eating disorder or the consequence of the eating disorder. So what I like to do when I'm seeing someone for the first time and they're reporting to me that they're experiencing symptoms of anxiety and or depression is to ask them if their eating disorder symptoms started before or after they started experiencing symptoms of their eating disorder. If the symptoms started before their eating disorder, then we can be suspicious that their symptoms of depression and anxiety may not completely subside or they may even worsen after they re-nourish their bodies. So, taking a closer look at depression in relation to these symptoms being a consequence of the patient's eating disorder, we know that serotonin is the key neurotransmitter that's responsible for mood and sleep regulation. So, when someone's restricted, they become malnourished, and they become malnourished. They're lacking enough tryptophan, which is that amino acid found in food. So tryptophan helps our brains make melatonin and serotonin. So that restriction of food creates a depletion of serotonin in their brains, and then they become to experience some symptoms of depression and anxiety. So we see it time and time again in situations like this that once a patient starts eating and decreases that habit of restriction, then their mood and sleep start to improve. I do have trauma listed on here, linked to the development of eating disorders, but we all know that not everyone who's experienced trauma is going to develop an eating disorder. Even though we don't provide trauma treatment here at higher levels of care, it can be helpful to ask assessment questions that way we can have a better understanding of the patient's presenting symptoms, which is something that we include in our psych assessments too. Now, if a patient does have co-occurring diagnoses, it can complicate the treatment process and make it more challenging to address both conditions simultaneously. So psychiatric conditions can influence a person's ability, like we see all the time, them engaging in their therapy or following the treatment recommendations that we're giving to them and then maintaining their recovery too. So it can also lead to the severity of the eating disorder symptoms. We've seen this in every one of our programs, but I will say DBT does a lot of experience in treating patients who are struggling with that co-occurring diagnosis or diagnoses. So it can be challenging at times to decide what the most appropriate treatment modality is for the patient. Is it the patient's eating disorder that's causing that exacerbation of the co-occurring psychiatric symptoms or vice versa? But regardless, if someone is struggling with eating disorder behaviors, we want to make sure that we've exhausted all of those resources while they're here to help reduce both the eating disorder behaviors and their declining mood symptoms. So when mood is interfering with the patient's ability to show up to program or their participation in treatment, we might see them with a rapid cycling of mania, or they're dealing with moderate to severe psychosis. It's likely very appropriate to address that in a primary mood program or some other facility, and then return to eating disorder treatment if needed. So that bidirectional relationship between eating disorders and mental health means that on one hand, the eating disorder can negatively affect their mental health. And then on the other hand, it's the mental health conditions that could be playing a role in developing the eating disorder as a way for them to cope with that emotional distress that they're under. So the eating disorder can serve as that maladaptive coping mechanism, and it's a way for them to exert control when they're faced with a lot of those overwhelming emotions. It's crucial to address, obviously, we know both of those eating disorders and that underlying mental health condition. So while we're talking about the diagnoses that we may see, patients with symptomatic eating disorders who are meeting or they're close to meeting criteria for OCD, borderline personality, bipolar, or ADHD, we may see them with these presenting symptoms, but they haven't been previously diagnosed with any of these disorders. So we want to be sure that the patient is properly nourished before diagnosing any of these disorders so that we can have a clearer picture of what their baseline symptoms truly are. So what may look like a comorbid condition because they're experiencing these symptoms, and these are some of the symptoms that, you know, we're seeing. It's the trouble focusing or concentrating on what we're directing them to, or that obsessive cognitive distortions. They can be more impulsive, have that emotional dysregulation and the mood fluctuations. Those are just common symptoms that could be related to the eating disorder and not a true co-occurring psychiatric disorder. So I'll speak for myself as a psych provider, and if you're new to working with me since I'm in this new group, you'll learn a little bit about my professional style. So I will always be careful and cautious when it comes to diagnosing a patient with any of these disorders listed on this slide. I'm not going to jump into diagnosing any of these disorders off of the first few appointments that I meet someone. And the reason for this is because I've learned along the way the importance of getting to know a patient's full story and their history, because there's things that are said and not said in the first few appointments that could lead to misdiagnosing a patient. And I've worked with many patients who have come to me with a laundry list of diagnoses, and it's been given to them throughout their treatment, throughout the years in their treatment. And a lot of times, I mean, I shouldn't say a lot of times, but sometimes these diagnoses are given to them off their first appointment ever meeting a provider. And working with them for weeks to months, I've seen these symptoms lead to some of the diagnoses subsiding after they've nourished their bodies. So we also want to consider that over and under reporting that we don't know is happening until we've spent more time with the patients and we've been able to gather more information. So I've also had patients who did one treatment round with us and then swore up and down that they weren't engaging in certain behaviors, and then they leave and return months to years later and they admit to that dishonesty. So that could be things like not only eating disorder behaviors that they're engaging in, but it could be, you know, substance abuse, so alcohol, drugs, things like that that they weren't disclosing the first time around. And even though we have come a long way in the mental health world, there's still some level of mental health stigma. And I just want to be absolutely sure that if I'm giving a diagnosis, but I have no doubts about the diagnosis, because unfortunately, certain diagnoses that follow patients around can have a negative impact on their treatment, the treatment that they receive. So I believe that it's fair to patients to absolutely provide an initial diagnosis to help them receive the treatment that they deserve. But I also want to make sure I'm being fair by not providing a diagnosis when I've only met them a few times and I haven't been able to gather enough information to support any of these diagnoses. So we're going to jump into the pharmacological treatment options for those who have eating disorders. And I want to mention how different this can look from someone who is being treated with anxiety and depression in the absence of an eating disorder. So in these situations, we begin treatment for anxiety and depression with the combination of psychotherapy and psychotropics. The medications really do fall behind psychotherapy and nutritional rehabilitation in treatment of eating disorders that precede anxiety and depression. So an appropriate time for us to start medications when someone is seeking treatment for their eating disorder is if their anxiety and depression are becoming a significant barrier to their participation in treatment. So it's also appropriate and crucial to start medications for comorbid psychiatric conditions that have been previously diagnosed, because we'll see patients come in and they have mood disorders, so bipolar, psychosis, anxiety, depression, And the patient's been off their medications for a while, so we want to make sure that we're restarting those medications for them and helping them develop some consistency taking their meds. And before we do get into some specific medications, I do want us to address some challenges that we see when trying to manage and prescribe some of these medications. So there's two primary issues that do surface when we're recommending medications to patients with eating disorders, and that's resistance to medications. And then also it's this interplay between medication side effects and eating disorder symptoms. The resistance to medications can be seen in patients who maybe they have a difficult time recognizing or admitting that they do have a problem and they don't feel like they need the treatment with a medication. And then another significant concern is most of the patients that we see, or a lot of them, have this fear of gaining weight on these medications because I know that that's a concern for these patients and in our population. Before they even tell me that this is a fear, I'll discuss the side effects, including the possibility of weight gain if they take one of these medications. So I'll reassure them that if there's any concerns about weight gain due to the medication, that I will bring this to their attention and we'll address it if they have any concerns or any side effects related to the medicine. Patients also may feel like they're losing control. And because the patients that we see often with eating disorders, they feel like their eating disorder behaviors are a way to control or have control over their lives. Accepting meds can feel like they're relinquishing that control. So some psychotropic medications can also cause some side effects, the GI distress, so that nausea, vomiting, constipation, diarrhea, which we know that a lot of our patients already have sensitive GI systems, so that can be a barrier too. And the medications that we prescribe that can cause an increase or decrease in appetite can be triggering too, so that may interfere with their treatment and recovery. And then we have medications that may be beneficial for someone who has anxiety and depression, but because of the certain eating disorder behaviors that the patient's engaging in, then these medications could lead to some dangerous side effects. So it could be electrolyte imbalances or some other medical complications that we have to keep an eye on. So we can manage some of these challenges by making sure that the patient is fully aware of the risks and benefits of taking the medicine that we're recommending. This does help reduce some of the fears that they have around taking the meds and making sure that we're closely monitoring some of those potential side effects too. So we want them to feel included in the decision-making process. So this can help them feel more in control and invested in their treatment. And then offering supportive therapy around the reasons why they may feel resistant or fearful to trying these medications. And I know a lot of the therapists, well, all of the therapists that I work with, they do such a great job. So thank you guys in helping support that with talking about their fears around medications. And then there, like I was mentioning before, there continues to be this stigma around mental health. And I have patients who will feel ashamed or weak if they take a psychotropic medication. That really is about reframing this idea so that they feel empowered to use tools to help improve their mental health. And medications, I mean, they really are tools that they can utilize when they're trying to reach their treatment goals. So I always take a slow and steady approach when it comes to working with patients who have some of these barriers in place. So it's building that rapport. It's taking the time to educate them on their medicine and then starting at lower doses to reduce any side effects or the potential for side effects can help reduce their fears. So I've had patients who, I mean, they've needed several appointments to finally feel like they're ready and comfortable enough to start medication. So it really is time and patience. That's the key. Okay, so when we're working with patients who have different types of mental health disorders, such as anxiety, depression, mood disorders, and psychosis, there's a few different things in the medications that we do recommend to patients with eating disorders. So typically when someone has moderate or severe anxiety and or depression, we start then with an antidepressant like Prozac, Lexapro, or Zoloft, which those are in SSRIs. Like I mentioned before, patients with symptomatic anorexia have depleted serotonin levels due to that restrictive nutritional intake. And because of this, SSRIs really don't work in low-weight anorexia. So serotonin communicates between nerve cells by exiting one neuron, passing through the synapse, which is that space between the neurons, and into the next neuron. So when someone's taking an SSRI, the antidepressant makes its way to their brain and binds to the neuron that the serotonin is exiting, which prevents the serotonin from going back into that original neuron. It helps push the serotonin into the next neuron. And the problem with this is that the medicine is blocking this action. And there's very little serotonin to begin with. So that's the major thing where we need to focus on the patient eating and re-nourishing their body so that they can create enough serotonin for the antidepressant to do its job. So once the patient is nourished, then we can if they haven't even tried it, we can introduce the antidepressant to target some of the anxiety and depressive symptoms that are present. So it doesn't mean that we don't have any options in circumstances like this. Olanzapine, also known as Zyprexa, is indicated for anorexia, but above any other psychotropic medication. So for adults, you guys might see me start a dose of 1.25 milligrams at bedtime to reduce anxiety and over-sedation, and then slowly titrate up, because 2.5 is usually that starting dose for most people, but we really want to start slower, because I'm sure some of us have already seen that, where patients are kind of just sleeping all throughout the day if they started a new medication. So starting even lower than starting doses can be helpful. And I'll only increase that when the patient's completely free of any side effects from the medication, just to avoid that over-sedation and side effects. And now, if some reason they're refusing to take Zyprexa, because that does happen quite often, or they can't take the medication, then I'll offer something like Seroquel. And to touch on the weight gain side effects of Zyprexa, research does show that when it comes to gaining weight, for someone who has anorexia on this medication, we typically see not a significant amount of weight gain. We're talking a few pounds in a month's time. So there's a lot of research out there that shows a significant amount of weight gain on this medication, on Zyprexa. And it's important to be aware that the majority of these studies are done on patients with bipolar or psychosis. So the dosages of these medications are at a much higher dose. So there are 10 milligrams or higher. In patients with mood disorders, their brain chemistry is much different from a patient who has anorexia. So this is also something that I discuss with the patients who have this fear around weight gain when it comes to taking the medication. The medications used to treat bulimia are the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. It's the Prozac, Lexapro, things like that. The FDA has approved Prozac for those who are struggling with purging behaviors. And for patients who have bulimia, the most effective dosages to help decrease the eating disorder behaviors are 60 milligrams a day, and sometimes even slightly higher than that. So providers typically will start a patient on Prozac at 10 to 20 milligrams a day, and then they'll stay at that 20 milligram dose for about 4 to 6 weeks before considering an increase. But for someone who is binging and purging, we want to try to increase that dose at a quicker rate. So increasing every 1 to 2 weeks until we hit that 60 milligram dose, as long as the patient's tolerating the increases. Really any SSRIs at a higher dose could be effective at reducing these behaviors. So if someone can't tolerate Prozac, then you might see us trying Lexapro or Zoloft at higher doses to help target that. Now, I want to make sure that we're talking about Wellbutrin. And if someone is purging, we really want to be cautious with this medication and try to stay away from it, because someone who's engaging in this type of behavior is at an increased risk of having seizures. So we can't say for sure the exact cause of this or reason, but we do believe that it is due to electrolyte imbalances when someone is actively purging on this medicine. And I know benzodiazepines listed here, but it really could have been listed on any of these slides. It isn't out of the question to start this medication temporarily for someone whose anxiety is really interfering with treatment, but it is rare that I will lean into these types of medications to treat anxiety. So the most common and the most obvious reason is the dependency component. But the other is, in a higher level of care, such as PHP, the patient has an opportunity for a significant amount of exposures during meals and snacks to challenge their eating disorder. And benzos really do numb that experience and exposure, which the exposures are really what we want here. So if we're giving them benzos during this crucial time, then they may be missing opportunities to truly face their fears and anxiety around those exposures. And once they come off the benzo, their anxiety will very likely resurface. So I do my best to try to avoid using these medications. But what complicates this for me is I see this very often in DBT more than any other program. Patients will come to me and they're already on benzos and they have been for months to years. So if someone's already been on this medication for longer than 2 months, their bodies are very likely addicted to the medication. So it's going to be challenging to try to reduce the medicine if the dose is very high. So this needs to be a slow wean off of the medication. It's rare that I'm going to get someone off of this medication while they're in a higher level of care, but especially if they've been on it and depended on it for a long time. But the goal is to try, but that's not always successful. So if they are taking something like Xanax or Ativan, then I'll try to switch them over to Klonopin if they can tolerate that because it has a longer half-life, so it tends to be easier. And I'm going to use that term loosely, easier to wean off of the medicine. So we'll try that. All right. So medications for binge eating disorder. So the FDA has approved Vyvanse to treat moderate to severe binge eating disorder. The standard treatment for this disorder is CBT or DBT, FET, one of those things. So I really try to lean into that, especially for someone who is seeking treatment in a higher level of care. When patients have been in treatment for some time and they are able to reduce that binge behavior, then Vyvanse is something that can be considered to help decrease the impulsivity that's related to the binge behavior. So I'm more likely to consider this for someone who's been binging daily multiple times a day, has been in multiple treatment stays, and they're just really struggling through this for years at a time. Not for someone who this is their first round in treatment, and we can try to target that with some behavioral therapy. So Vyvanse though at 50 to 70 milligram dosages can significantly decrease or if not completely stop the binging behavior for a lot of people. So even though there is something to be cautious over, and that's patients who are struggling with the binge restrict cycle. And it's the restriction here that can be really concerning in this disorder with initiating a stimulant because of that potential side effect on the appetite. So when starting and titrating those doses, they may notice that side effect. Okay, so since we're already talking about stimulant medications, I think we can talk about patients who already come to us on Adderall, Concerta, Vyvanse stimulants to help target ADHD. I am an advocate for treating ADHD. So untreated ADHD really can make treatment challenging for patients. It's participating in their treatment, especially in a higher level of care, because it requires a lot of focus and attention for them. So if someone comes to me on a stimulant, I will try my best to allow them to stay on the medication. But if someone is very low weight or they're engaging in eating disorder behaviors and is really struggling to reach their goal weight range, then this is a different conversation. We will have a discussion about needing to put this medication on hold until they've gained some stability in their treatment. And stimulants don't only decrease appetite, which is typically seen when they're starting the medication or if the dose is increased too quickly or maybe it's too high of a dose for the patient, they'll really notice that change in their appetite. So not only that, but it can also speed up the patient's metabolism. So even if they aren't engaging in eating disorder behaviors, but they aren't gaining weight when expected to based off their meal plan, then it very well may be related to the medicine and increasing their function with their metabolism.
Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Landing Imperfect. I truly appreciate you being a part of this community and sharing this journey with me. If you do want to connect further, then don't hesitate to follow me on Instagram at jen.lander. I would love to hear your thoughts, any questions, or any stories that you want to share, so DM me there. I also have a website. It's a Landing Imperfect website where I share a blog post about my podcast, and then you can join my email list. I have a PDF that provides anxiety and stress management tools that you can use as well when you join my email list. So check it out. My website will be linked in my show notes. So don't hesitate to